Welcome to Chamber Talk with North Orange County Chamber. I'm your host, Andrew Gregson, and today we have a very special guest joining with us. Please welcome Assemblywoman Sharon Quirk-Silver to the show. Assemblywoman, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today, and it's truly an honor to have you here, so thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to speak to you and speak to the Chamber.
Excellent. Now, you have been in the city of Fullerton for quite some time now, and you've got a lot of history here, and we don't want to really go into that because most people should know you by now. However, I did want to first congratulate you, as I noticed that last Thursday, one of your bills, AB 1506, that you had sponsored had just gone through. Would you like to quickly just open up and share a little bit about that?
Yes, we've had several bills move now to the second house, as we call it, the Senate, and but one bill that moved to the governor's and that he is looking at is AB 1506, which is Moving with Dignity. As you know, as a former classroom teacher, and this simply says for foster youth that they could have the opportunity to move, go back to their school that they are being moved from, collect their belongings, say goodbye to their teachers and friends, and move on. We know that there's a lot of trauma with foster youth moving many times, and this is a way to address that.
I think that's a really great idea, and it sounds fantastic, and I'm sure there's many bills that sometimes come across your desk that you see like this. Could you give us an example for the listeners as to how you would suddenly find that there was something missing, and why would you suddenly go about and amend something?
Well, one of the things that people don't realize about legislation is legislation comes to us sometimes by advocates or lobbyists, but sometimes it comes from even constituents where they have an idea, they present it, and then sometimes it actually comes from myself and my own experiences. So again, as a classroom teacher, I saw that firsthand we'd have students that would come and actually disappear, just be gone. We'd get a letter that we should send their report cards over, but not their belongings, no closure, and we'd find that they had been moved to another placement.
And I can certainly understand and relate to how that would be a little traumatic because, you know, we all need closure even when we're older, let alone when we're a kid. Moving straight along, because, you know, education is a big part of your background, and obviously you're very passionate about that and lots of other things too. What sort of concerns do you have regarding education, if any, right now, and what specific measures or proposals would you have to address those concerns?
Well, I do spend quite a bit of time on education. As we know, it's the great equalizer. Many times it is students that are first in their family to graduate, as I was many years ago. And we know our community colleges, our, of course, CSU and UC systems are some of the most highly ranked in the country. We know that there's other countries that students want to come here to be educated. But with that, we also know since the pandemic that we still don't have our students returning to campuses in the way we did in higher ed. And we also know that we have lower class enrollment, which is causing many of our public schools to have to do combined classes, maybe even close schools. So with that, making sure we're continuing to invest in education, we take that very seriously at the state, as even in a slim budget cycle, we are continuing to invest dollars into public education because, again, like I said, it's the great equalizer, and we want to see those students that seek an education get one here in California.
And in your findings there, what do you think the stumbling block is? Why aren't these older teens not going back to college or maybe not thinking about it?
Well, right here in North Orange County, we have premier colleges from Fullerton College. Now in my district includes Cerrito College and, of course, Cal State Fullerton. We know that really the hybrid of going back to campus and doing online classes is what students are preferring. And that makes us really need to look at reimagining that kind of brick and mortar campus where we don't have as many students wanting to return in person. Some of that is for very good reasons, whether it's drive time, whether it's parking time, whether it's childcare. We've seen our community colleges prefer these online choices. There will be some classes that they need to be on campus, and I am a supporter of the hybrid model.
And you were mentioning before about obviously there's money going back into the educational system. Just by listening to you, I'm imagining some of that would be to help fund with the technology they require to keep it hybrid, or is there other things that you have to look at?
Well, some of the funds, of course, is to keep the instructors there, the professors, high-quality professors, but it's also facilities. We know, for example, Cal State Fullerton has very aging campuses, even though they are building new venues. For example, there was quite a bit of money put into the engineering building that they are looking forward towards the future. There was housing built at Cal State Fullerton, but some of their older buildings are well over 50 years. So some of this facility money to go in and make sure they're updating classrooms. And again, not just the structure, but technology as well. We, of course, know learning is much different than 50 years ago. But it is a big investment, and the state takes that seriously. It's never quite enough. Unfortunately, right now, CSU is talking about raising some tuition, and we're concerned about that.
And do you feel that would have a larger, or offer a larger challenge to get kids to come back into?
We know that any tuition increase, whether it's a parking fee, whether it's a student body fee for ASB, those do deter students, especially when they're on a tight budget. We also know that students have more choices than we may have as adults, and they're starting to relook at what does it mean to go to college. We know there's startups, there's innovation, and some are really questioning the debt that they may incur. Which, of course, is why our community colleges is really the very good value for their education. But it's not for everybody.
No.
And we want to make sure students understand that there's apprentice programs out there. Right here in North Orange County, you might not know this, but we actually have the Carpenters Union right in Buena Park, apprentice program, where when these young carpenters finish, they're going to be getting a very livable salary. In La Palma, we have the ironwork apprentice program. Again, many of those iron workers have worked on the campus of Disney, building Star Wars, all of these, and again, a very good living wage. So we want to, I believe, do a better job, particularly with our male students, letting them know there are opportunities. We're seeing some of our male students flounder at colleges, and some of the things that they want to do is be working with their hands. And so we need to really start to provide those skills, whether it's plumbing, carpentry, the trades, that there's a value in that. All too often, I know myself, even as a parent, we say we'd like our kids to go to college, but it's not for everybody.
Right. And do you, or should I say, is there some type of funding that's going into these types of trade schools, perhaps, or maybe looking at larger corporations that back in the day, they used to have trade schools, didn't they? I mean, do you think that this could be something that's turning around and coming back again then?
There is, and we also have invested in career technical education, or CTE, and again, it's for these various pathway programs, so whether they're apprentice through your ROP programs, like nursing, early nursing classes, restaurant, hospitality, these pathway programs, even what you've seen at community colleges, like the cosmetology. Not everybody wants that four-year degree, so we need to take serious these types of avenues that people are seeking.
So I feel we've slogged education there a little bit. But moving out from education and still staying in that realm a little bit. I know that I think you mentioned earlier that at the beginning of the year you were on the Committee of Arts, Entertainment, Sport and Tourism for the state. Why not share a little bit about that and then maybe what other things are going on for jobs for that area?
Yes, this committee that I'm now chair of for the state of California, the Committee on Arts, Entertainment, Tourism, and Sports, obviously is a very robust committee. It touches many sectors throughout the state of California. As we know, California is iconic in its not only bringing tourism here with our theme parks, with our venues from concerts, SoFi Stadium to Universal Studios, but also with our sporting events from basketball to the Dodgers, baseball. We have people who literally travel to California because of what the state has to offer. Our committee, in fact, has been very involved in the film tax credit, $330 million to the Motion Picture Association in order to promote and keep filming here in California.
Oh, okay.
As you know, though, right now, the Motion Picture Association is at odds with the Actors Guild, with the Writers Guild, and so there is a strike going on. Our hope is that these scenarios related to workplace negotiations get rectified as quickly as possible, because the big concern is the economy of California. As you know, somebody who works on a film, it is not just the actors, the directors, or the production crew. It's also the multiplier effect of the hairstylist, the makeup artist, catering, restaurants that surround these studios, and they're all saying that these scenario right now with the strikes are impacting them. So we want to get California back to work in the right. movie industry, and we want to keep them here, which is what that film tax credit is. As we know, there's other states that are recruiting filming out of California, and we want to be competitive. That's why this tax credit was a big win in just this last month's negotiations.
I think they're getting hit hard from all areas, aren't they? Because as technology has evolved, a lot of independent filmmakers can now afford to do films themselves. And of course, these other entities like Netflix and things, they've come on board and they're buying them. So it's making it hard for the studios. So I can see that. As you were mentioning that, I'm sorry, I can't help but mentioning this, because obviously I'm from England, not from America. But years ago, when you were talking about, and I do apologize, I should have said chair, I got that wrong. So I'm glad you mentioned that. I was imagining there was a big advertisement campaign, and it was Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it was to have your holiday, and it was tourism for California. And I was just thinking, are you going to do some big, long advertisement with the sea behind you as you're talking about the tourism for California?
Well, we actually are doing that. We have Visit California. Right. As you know, there's many commercials that are there, and that is funded through Visit California. And it really is about saying, come here, take your vacation here, highlighting from San Diego to San Francisco, of course, our iconic places to visit, from Yosemite to the beaches. And we have a lot to celebrate here in California. But on the other hand, we know that, again, another effort is through the strikes now with Unite Here, which are mostly the hospitality workers that are working in resorts, not just the Disneyland resort, but also our resorts from the oceans to hotels. And again, we want those rectified, because little by little, that will start to affect tourism. I can say under this committee, we also represent our big theme parks. And of course, my district, not only do I live here in Fullerton, but Disneyland and Knott's Berry Farm are part of my district. I, in fact, have been out to their sites. They have seen returned guests since the pandemic. As you know, it was really a very difficult time when the parks were closed. But they're still lagging in some of our international visitors coming. So our Chinese, Korean visitors, trying to get them to get back on a plane and come out to California, because we know when they come out, we'll see that much more value in our economy. But this important committee, as we know, all of those things from sports to our movie industry to our hospitality really pumps in dollars to our account, our economy.
Talking about hospitality, I saw some weeks ago now, it was in Anaheim, which is one of your cities, isn't it? That they were having some type of situation with the unions, with the hospitality. Would you like to share a bit about that, or is it still ongoing, or?
Yes, it's not just Anaheim, but Anaheim is one of the cities that's trying to negotiate with the resort area. But there have been other areas, Los Angeles, Long Beach, and the union that represents many of the hospitality workers is Unite Here. Mm-hmm. And they are asking for a ballot measure in Anaheim to increase the minimum wage. And there are mixed feelings on there, mm-hmm. on this. For some of the hotel owners, small or large, there's the fear that this rate increase could really make it very difficult to continue to operate their businesses. On the other side, as far as the workers go, they're saying that, they can barely afford to live in Orange County and right. work in these hotels or resort areas. And some of them are driving quite a long ways. And we've even heard stories of people living in their cars in order to keep these jobs. So when we start to look at a minimum wage, there is a lot of data and math out there that simply shows that a minimum wage job in Orange County is not going to be able to pay for even a studio apartment, mm-hmm. let alone a one-bedroom or one-bath. And we're seeing this also in our middle-class community. Mm-hmm. We're graduating thousands of students from UCI, Cal State Fullerton, our community colleges, literally thousands in Orange County. And one has to think about, can those students who are graduating and we're investing in stay here in Orange County and work in Orange County? And we want them to do that because we know there's that investment. But we've also seen that some of them are making choices because they can't afford even an entry-level apartment.
Right. And talking about the increase of the cost of living here, because it's great putting the hourly salary up or the hourly rate. However, if things still cost too much, you know, you still can't make it. So leading into affordable housing, which I know is another mark on your radar there, we'd like to share a little bit about how that's moving forward and what's going on.
Yes, I'm on the housing committee at the state of California, and as noted, we have a choice as legislators what area we want to focus on, what area we're going to make a priority. And housing, not only market rate housing, but affordable and extremely affordable housing are certainly on my list. And we don't have to go too far to connect the dots between a lack of affordable housing and homelessness. Before our eyes, we have seen a crisis that some never thought would happen here in California. It's not only California. We know housing prices across the state are rising at a very high pace. One of the things that we have seen firsthand is we simply aren't building the housing production we need. And when we get projects that come to the local governments, often there will be groups that are opposed to them. Mm-hmm. When this happens, many times a council will choose to table the project, hold the project, send it back to planning, and this can add years or even delay the project for good. Sadly, this affects our economy, mm-hmm. because if we can't get people into housing, people that already are in apartments don't have that first house to move to. And then those apartment units that they're currently in are held because there's not inventory out there. And of course, it does affect our homeless. Every time we house two or three people, we're seeing five people fall into homelessness. One of the highest numbers of people falling into homelessness is women over 50.
Oh, really?
So we used to think, oh, it was that 20-some-year-old guy who's on drugs or addicted. And yes, there are some of that. I certainly acknowledge that. But we have families falling into homelessness. And many times the quote is, we have many, many people who are one paycheck away from being homeless. So mm-hmm. preventing homelessness, keeping people in a unit, even with assistance, is better than them being evicted. Once they're evicted, it's very hard for them to get that off their record. But we have quite a bit to do. I will say, being on the housing committee in the state often can make some local government elected officials angry, because we have said yes to legislation that moves the needle. And sometimes I will hear from my local electeds, you're mandating us to do this, or why are you getting involved in local issues? But the truth is, we aren't doing enough in Orange County. If every city out of 34 cities in Orange County would do a little bit more, we'd find ourselves much further along. But since we've had stalls and delays and excuses, we just don't see the housing popping up. It is in some areas, but there's many cities that are not doing any type of affordable housing.
Now, there's no magic wand to this. And, you know, you're a very experienced lady. You've been on city council. You've been a mayor. Now, so you've gone from local government. Now you're on state government. If you had this better, well, I can get in there and do it, what sort of things might you propose to help this along? Maybe some of our local officials are listening and they might think about what you have to say.
I would say that every city, no matter what their size is, and I have La Palma, one of the smallest cities of an Orange County, if they did something according to their population, not according to the size of Orange County, but just within their own city, that could, you know, making a step, maybe building 10 units of affordable housing, mm-hmm. 20 if you're bigger, 30 if you're even bigger.
Sure.
Because if we all did tackle this, just say we needed 5,000 units affordable housing. If every city, 34 cities, did something, not pushing it onto another city, not saying, well, that city next door is doing it, so we don't have to do it. If everybody did something in the scope of building housing, and then like in North Orange County, we have a coalition of cities who've come together, mm-hmm. who are putting their money together for shelters, mm-hmm. one in Buena Park, mm-hmm. one in Placentia, and Illumination Foundation in Fullerton. That's the way you can solve it regionally. But there certainly isn't a magic wand, but it is really incumbent on every city to do their share and not delay, ignore, or push it off to some other city.
Now, you mentioned, and a lot of people talk about, it's affordable housing. And one thing I learned when we were advocating for one of our contractors was affordable housing isn't necessarily what you automatically think affordable would be. It has to do with the rates that are going on with the housing and things like that. Is that something that at the state level they would try and intervene with or persuade to go other ways for people to change that?
Well, there's a lot of talk right now about legislation that could help subsidize affordable housing for cities, because cities certainly don't have all the tools mm-hmm. or the dollars to build affordable housing mm-hmm. without support. There are ways for cities to apply for the state, and the state does have funding to help support these affordable housing projects. However, they're competitive, and there's a lot of people out there that want them. For sure, though, is if you don't compete or apply, you're going to get $0.
Of course.
If you do compete, you might get some, maybe not enough. But there are even talks of bringing back what was formerly called redevelopment
okay.
agencies. Mm-hmm. And there's quite a bit of support from the League of Cities for this. I support it as well. But even when we did have redevelopment, so we're going back over a decade, there were some cities who still didn't use those funds in the spirit that they were opted for. Mm-hmm. So they might build some type of community project But they weren't building in the areas that were bringing in that tax increment.
Right.
So one of the reasons redevelopment really got a bad name was because of that. But there was also other cities who did an excellent job. Fullerton built several Habitat for Humanity homes in the area, Richmond neighborhood. I think I'm going to say maybe 20, 25. And these are home-owned homes now through Habitat for Humanity. So there's excellent models out there and best practices, but we have to be more aggressive about seeking state dollars, seeking federal dollars, and getting people willing to be part of the solution for housing.
So with this all this talk about affordable housing, and you sort of briefly touched on the topics before about homelessness, and then, of course, that leads into mental health. What sort of things are going on at your level regarding all those issues?
Well, when we think about people as a whole or holistically, we know that there's been a lot of struggle from the pandemic. Students who felt very isolated, really struggled, weren't doing sports at that time. We also know with mental health issues, sometimes they can start in adolescence and get even worse as adults if they go untreated, meaning having any type of therapy. And yet for many, navigating our mental health system, the county mental health system, is extremely difficult. So there's been quite a bit of work on trying to have providers at the local level, whether they're community centers, whether they're resource centers, to really help individuals not navigate, help them make these connections to get the early support that they need. Sadly, we know all too often, as mentioned before, there are individuals that are having extreme mental health difficulties that are on the street. Some would even classify them as schizophrenic. Some of these individuals certainly are not just going to be able to recover on their own, and they need some serious mental health help. The state is entering into a whole new era of care called mental health court systems, or courts that would be assigned to some very severely mentally ill individuals. With this, they would put forward a plan not only for therapy, for medication, but even housing. And it would be a very rigorous plan. And we think that Orange County is one of the initial providers that has said we want to try this. So we think that once this is up and running, it will definitely make a difference for some of the most severely mentally ill that we see on our streets. However, the big issue there is we will still have this issue of housing. Mm. And that's where we have to start to reimagine and look at all types of housing models. We know sometimes what we say affordable housing, it could cost between $600,000 and $800,000 to build a unit.
Right.
That certainly is not sustainable for government or anybody else. So re-looking at, when we say tiny homes, people think of like a tough shed, but there's actually some tiny homes that are made into communities that they have gardens at, where they have a therapy on campuses, but they're a much smaller, almost a dorm room style, that are much more affordable. So we have to start looking at different models and ways to build that are not going to cost us these escalated prices. But with mental health, it's definitely trying to get ahead of it before it becomes so escalated that in many ways we see what we're seeing on the streets, which is very upsetting to everybody.
We actually had Supervisor Doug Chafee on a couple of months ago, and he was talking about that court system, because he was also going to do the same for people who had been incarcerated and how it could help them get back on the feet. How far along, that was some time ago, so how far along are they with almost maybe launching this or moving along? Or
It is actually called Care Court.
Care Court, that's it.
And it is moving very quickly into its stages. Of course, one of the parts of this system will be the judges, making sure there's judges that want to serve as judges for this Care Court. But it will be all the partners from the county as well, because they will certainly be involved. There are still some people think that it goes too far, ACLU, others who say you're taking rights away. But again, we're talking about severely mentally ill, somebody that you feel is a danger. They're walking on the freeway with no shoes,
right?
Something like this. But we have to push forward with new types of innovative projects or systems, because we can see that right now we're not handling it. So it doesn't mean this is going to be easy or it's going to be perfect. There's no one way to solve these issues, but these critical problems have gotten worse, and we have to move forward with, in this case, Care Court that we think can help.
Now, you know, I've put you on the spot and asked you all these questions, and it's almost like, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? But on the other side, what can local governments or even a community do to help with this?
Well, today my office just hosted a nonprofit workshop. We had 60 people who showed up that represented different agencies. We held it in Anaheim this morning. We brought in Cal nonprofits to speak. We brought in one OC from nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And again, some of the themes there, so listen to this, were all the C's. You got to collaborate. You got to communicate. You have to make connections. And we are finding that so often when there's really critical issues, whether it's housing somebody, whether it's jobs, all of these things, too often we're standing behind, or sitting, I should say, behind a desk on a computer. And we got to go back to what I call old school, new school. Old school means pick up the phone, face to face, talk to somebody, meet with somebody, and make a connection. Because as a nonprofit or as a provider, resource provider, you don't have all of those resources. But if you share and connect with somebody, you might be able to say, I have a person here that really needs X. Can we work together?
Right.
And too often we're trying to solve problems kind of in an isolated way.
Little area, right.
But it's the same also for business,
mm-hmm.
because we call that networking,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And networking is something that good business owners, small or large, know that they need to do. They've
right.
got to do their branding. They've got to be out making face-to-face connections. They have to be pushing people through their doors.
Yep.
And in the nonprofit world, we have to do more of that, advocating, getting to know other people, and really slimming down their menu, too, so that every nonprofit doesn't feel like they have to have 20 services. Maybe they only have five,
right.
but they do those really focused. Well.
Right, right. So and then collaborate focused. With others who do, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then breaking down the doors of competition,
mm-hmm.
because we see that in business too,
mm-hmm.
but also
mm-hmm.
in nonprofits. Maybe you're an art organization. We have Fullerton Museum. We have the Museo in Anaheim,
mm-hmm.
can they work together,
mm-hmm.
because they're not competing for the same funding? Like,
right.
hey, we got this grant,
yeah.
the Muckenthaler, you might do well with this group, but really sharing, and mostly because of the pandemic, but even because of technology in the last decade, I see much less of that. Hey, let's get a cup of coffee. Let's talk about what you're doing. Come to our open house. And we have to get back to that. And some of the Chamber of Commerces, like the North Orange County Chamber of Commerce, the Hispanic Chamber, do an excellent job with that. So when you walk in, they have their badge on, you know, okay, this is the sign lady. This is, somebody who's representing, and nonprofits could take a good look at that and I think do a little bit better job.
It's funny you just mentioned that, because as you were talking about those things, I was just about to say, well, maybe they should look at joining a Chamber of Commerce. In fact, over the last year and a bit, because there was this weird bit where we were still in COVID, still out, what were we doing? Everybody was trying to figure themselves out. that's exactly what you're saying people should do. That's exactly how business members have sort of like coming together. They realized after COVID that working together, it's going to be a better thing. And there's less of this separation and this, I'm not going to share with you what I'm doing just in case you steal my idea. And this collaboration is starting to work. So you're right. You're definitely in the right direction. And we're seeing it now with our own members. In the top of my head, I've got four or five that only in recent months have started working together and doing better because they're working together. And they've chosen different sections that they're better at and allowed the others to take care of those. So that's, you're definitely
on
the ball
there. And that came out this morning, which is, you know, when you look at the services you're providing, is there somebody next door that's doing it better than you?
Right, right.
And do you need to kind of pivot and maybe take another part and really do that well? We know that there's a lot, particularly when you're talking about communities reentering into work, whether it's formerly incarcerated, and there's resume training, and there's clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Those two are pretty much out there. Mm-hmm. I think we have that.
We have that down, right?
But the next part is whether it's interviewing skills, whether it's making sure they really do have skills, whether it's helping with transportation. There's other areas that somebody could pick up when you're in that area of, we have entry-level people trying to get a job. So maybe, hey, you go to this nonprofit for the resume and the clothing, but now we're going to do the interview skills so that you're not trying to do every single one of a menu of 10 things.
I've actually written a business plan that answers those questions. And after this, I'll email it over to your office and maybe you could take a look at it and maybe we could start on something with that.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you. So talking about mental health and then, of course, homelessness, which sort of borders into, veterans and the struggles that they see. Well, you probably know him, Marty Burbank from downtown there. He was giving a talk at our Rotary here in Fullerton. And it made me think about how many friends, because I was a veteran too, that we've lost over the years to depression and things like that. So we meet every Monday down at the Korean War Memorial that was heavily involved Joe Pack from your office. So good job, Joe. And basically, it's just veterans getting together and talking about whatever problems they want to talk about. There's no agenda or anything like that. So with that said, people are obviously trying to do different things. And I know you've done a lot of things and I've seen them also on your bill sheet there. Do you mind sharing a little bit about what your works are there?
Well, regarding veterans, I used to be a handful of years ago the chair of the Veterans Committee of the state of California, and that was almost 10 years ago, my first term, and that, in fact, is where veterans came to me and let me know about Orange County not having a veteran cemetery. And to be honest, that's exactly the beginning of where we started this effort to bring an Orange County veteran cemetery to Orange County. The sites have changed multiple times. We're finally set here on Gypsum Canyon in Anaheim. We have over $25 million from the state. We have another $20 million from the county.
Wow.
We have the site, and currently right now it is being studied by our Department of General Services. So we're very excited about that. We feel that we are inching towards this becoming real for many of our veterans. But again, we're talking about veterans that are passing away. Mm-hmm. Of course, our World War II at a very high rate. There's almost very few left.
Left, right.
But we have others. But the other side of the veteran conversation is really about those veterans who are returning for tours of duty, whether it's Afghanistan, Vietnam, any of the other wars that are veterans. And we know that PTSD is real, that many of them don't seek the help that they need. And sadly, suicides among veterans are real and happen often. So what you mentioned that Marty Burbank is doing is very valuable. I've spent a lot of time with different veterans groups, and that's one of the number one things they say is talking to other veterans mm-hmm. that understand really is very valuable. So the more of those type of sessions that we can do, but again, another word is a navigator, because one of the things we hear too often is the young veterans that return, they're not accessing their benefits. They're not accessing the therapy or medical attention that they need until it gets almost too late. And so we're looking on that front end of before they even leave the military, there is an orientation they have to go through, but so many of them are not making it through all the processes to attain, keeping records, all of these things. And so there's still got to be work there. Now, there has been some positive efforts where some of the veterans actually are accessing them and even getting jobs before they leave. But it is many times left up to that individual. So to encourage many more to really know, have a game plan mm-hmm. before they leave. And that's not only for work, but mental health as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And physical.
Yeah.
So it's, again, looking at people holistically to know that there's a lot of places that we need to support one another.
Well, there's a lot going on when you first leave the military, because first off, the transition's very difficult because you've just lived a very routine life. You're basically, whether you like to admit this or not, you're told what to get, how to get up in the morning, what to wear, where to eat, where you're going, and all the rest of stuff. And then suddenly you're thrown back out, especially if you've just done a couple of tours in tours of duty, active service somewhere. And then you're coming back out into the civilian world, and that is a very hard area to navigate. That's something that we're trying to put together at the Chamber as well to help people. When you were mentioning before about when they're wanting to go into business themselves, or they're looking to do the smaller things in life to get to the next stage, is those the types of classes that we're asking members who are professional in their field to come in and give those types of classes to people to help out. And but yes, that transition stage is very difficult. I'll be honest, I was only in 7 years, and it took me about 4 to 5 years to comfortably transition back into civilian life. It is difficult.
And we hear the same, I know, very different population, but the same transition is true of our formerly incarcerated.
Oh, I bet.
So again, yes, they've been in prison for whatever crimes, but when they leave,
right,
a lot of times there's no transition plan, and all too often we have them returning. Right here in Fullerton is a very exciting program called Project Rebound.
Mm-hmm.
And this actually connects with formerly incarcerated while they're incarcerated, and they start to take classes from Cal State Fullerton. So they've already completed maybe their community college in prison for mm-hmm. many of them. Then they start taking classes while they're in prison. And when they exit, they're a student from Cal State Fullerton. And now they've provided wraparound services for them, not only for their education, supporting them with housing, all of the support systems. And some of those formerly incarcerated men and women are now graduating with their 4-year degree and even a master's.
Well, if you think about it, I don't know if you've actually seen them yourself, because you don't really have much time, but there are quite a few documentaries out there and programs discussing how other countries like Norway and places like that, they actually have those types of programs, and that's exactly how they've sort of rehabilitated people back in to help them set themselves up. Because the other part, of course, is somebody comes to you and they tell you that they've been in prison. Of course, we're always thinking the worst of the worst, and you want to run away. And I think that's another mindset that has to be overcome in order for these programs to work extremely well.
Right. And I think, again, it's an education for the community as well, that if we act the way we have many times in the past, whether it's shunning, formerly incarcerated, or even, to be honest, sometimes a veteran, they can sometimes have employment issues. Mm-hmm. because there's this idea or a narrative that maybe in some cases have been true, but in many cases they're not. And so they can find themselves having a hard time mm-hmm. getting employment. So it's about really educating employers and community groups about who are these people, and that, yes, in fact, people can change. They can go through programs, and they need to be embraced when they do. We always know that there's some that don't.
Of course.
But we want them to change. We want them to do better, because then that grows and rises our community.
I'm sure there's more, a larger percentage that succeeds than there are the smaller percentage that actually fails. How do you go about working with the other parties, cross parties, and how you try and build those relationships to help everything run smoothly?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because if you talk to people in a political conversation, it feels like there's never been a greater divide. It's very hard to even say the word Democrat or Republican,
right,
because some people get extremely angry,
upset,
no matter
whatever,
which
right.
party you are mm-hmm. at. But I'd like to let the listeners know that, you know, actually Janet Nguyen, Senator Janet Nguyen, and I work extremely closely. We'll be doing a joint children's resource fair August 5th.
Yeah, in Cyprus. Right.
We often sit on the plane together, but not just her. What people don't realize is the Republicans and Democrats travel together mm-hmm. on the same plane. We have a lounge that we often are in and out for coffee, and we sit on the same committees.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we vote similar. You don't hear about those votes mm-hmm. many times. I'm going to say the vast majority of times we have consensus votes, but you don't hear about that.
Of course,
because
not.
That's the kind of thing that doesn't make news.
Right.
Now, of course, we have contentious votes. Sometimes you'll hear tidbits about it, and sometimes they're out of context. So I'll just give you a context. Last week, there was this very contentious, what seemed like votes on the assembly floor regarding human trafficking. Nobody I know, Democrat or Republican, supports human trafficking.
Right, right.
But sometimes these narratives get played out, and I will say there was a public safety committee that didn't vote a bill out related to human trafficking, because there was that committee felt like it would actually hurt some of the victims of mm-hmm. human trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't get voted out. The next day, because there was so much media attention, and there was a forced vote on the floor of the assembly to send it back to recommittee to reconsider it. It was voted out by full support. But the narrative was Democrats are siding with pedophiles.
Right, right.
Which, by the way, I wasn't on that committee, so I voted, of course, to resend it back to committee. But sometimes people only want to hear the narrative they want to hear. And that I would beg the listeners to, whether you're Republican or Democrat, is research a bill. Because
mm-hmm.
sometimes I'll have a community forum and it'll be, why are you doing this?
Right.
And this bill does this. And I'll say that either bill was amended, it's not even in play anymore, it's been held, or they've changed the language
mm-hmm.
on it. But sometimes there's media on both sides that want wins.
Right.
And when they want these wins, it means somebody else has to be the evil doer. And
yeah.
we see that on both sides.
Yes, yes.
So I really think my experience from being on the Fullerton City Council, mayor two times, working, in my case, I was the only Democrat with all Republicans for all of my 8 years there, really was a learning ground to work together with my colleagues. Because again, when you're elected, you're not elected to only represent Democrats mm-hmm. or only represent Republicans or only represent independents or only represent one issue. You're represented to elect a district.
Mm-hmm.
So I try very hard to listen. Even if I don't agree with somebody, we try to respond back. We try very hard to give people the reason why I supported something or I don't. Not everybody agrees with me. But I think you will find that people have said we've done an excellent job on being available, listening to others, and building consensus where we can.
That's awesome. That is exciting. And for those listening, because I don't wish to waste too much of the Assemblywoman's time. But if you listen to Senator Wynne's podcast, she actually goes through what happens when a bill doesn't get passed and sometimes how it goes into amendment, because it might only be a sentence that people weren't agreeing with that changed other people's lives and then goes back. So by all means, if you want to learn more about it, she gives a great explanation of that. So as we're drawing towards a close of our podcast, you've sat through here in the heat for a good 50 minutes, so thank you very much. What other things would you like to share with us, things that maybe you're trying to push through, other things you'd like to share? It's your open time.
Well, I would just like to say it has been an honor and a privilege to be a representative elected since 2004, 8 years on Fullerton City Council, now in my fifth term, California State Assembly. And I do learn as much from my constituents as I hope to give them information. We do listen. We do know there's critical issues that are happening that concern our constituents. Like we said, whether it's homelessness, whether it's crime, we take that seriously. But it is a job that I take seriously. I'm very proud to have it. And again, if they have any issues or concerns, please call our office.
That's beautiful. And your office, have you moved from Fullerton yet?
Yes, we recently moved to more central part of the district. Some of the listeners may not know our district was redistricted, so now I have 70% of Orange County, which includes Fullerton, Buena Park, Anaheim, La Palma, Cypress, and then three cities in Los Angeles, 30% of the district, Cerritos, Hawaiian Gardens, and Artesia. So we have now moved our office to La Palma. It's on 4 Center Point Drive.
Okay,
in La
Palma.
But we'll be having an open house in October, an Oktoberfest.
Okay.
If they're interested in things that we do, we always have usually an event every month. Just go on to our state website and put your information there, and you'll get our e-alerts. You'll get our events. We'll be starting a walk and talk series.
Wow.
A walk and talk in each city starting in August, our Oktoberfest, and we're here to help.
Excellent. Well, Assemblywoman Quicksilver, thank you so very much for your time today. Really do appreciate it, and wish you all the very best of luck, and hopefully have a fantastic rest of your week and a wonderful weekend. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
For those who've tuned in, thank you very much for listening, and we hope you'll visit nocchamber.com and select sign up for news at the top of the page to join our mailing list. For more interviews, visit chambertalk.podbean.com, and we invite you to like, follow, and share Chamber Talk. Take care.